Yeah, can you sign an NDA? That'd be great.
Are we recording?
Yeah.
Oh.
Always be recording.
I love it. Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. We have our second guest. We're so excited to have our second guest here.
We're getting good at guests.
I'm very honored that you're here with us. This is someone who I look up to a lot and I love a lot, and I'm excited to hear from you. Dad, welcome to the podcast.
It's great to be here. It's kind of fun to know what you guys have been doing for a few episodes and to be asked to be part of it. I'm looking forward to it.
You're already like a professional.
Truly a professional.
So yeah, we kind of talked to you a little bit about why we wanted to do this, and we had the chance to talk with Mary Kay, Kate's mom, yesterday, and we feel that it's really important to just have these memories and have these conversations saved and recorded. The like historian in me loves this, just to like have it archived and saved away for, you know, our own family, for the future, whatever. So are you excited? Are you ready?
I'm ready. This sounds like a great idea.
Oh, I'm gonna put
Catherine podcasting 101. I'm just kidding.
Horrible behavior.
Okay, Dad, first question. Tell us a little bit about where you're from and just kind of growing up, your experience. You can hold a podcast. You can hold our iPad.
Well, I was born in Council Bluffs, Iowa, and until this podcast, only about 8 people in the world knew that, because I always claimed I was from Omaha, Nebraska, which is across the river, which is the big city. But grew up in Nebraska/Iowa, was in Denver for a little while, had kind of a rough grow up, you know, as far as growing up. And my dad was a truck driver. My mom was a cook. So we weren't rich by any stretch, but we seemed to always get by. Had 3 older sisters. I was the baby of the family, and they loved picking on me. Other than that, went to school in Omaha, Nebraska, high school. Went to college 1 year, Wayne State College, ran track. Transferred to Nebraska, was going to run track, and blew out a knee in a basketball game. And wasn't smart enough to know that you should stay in school. Instead, didn't. Was able to, you know, do well with both working at Boys Town, which was a place I worked with kids for 5 years. Gave me a lot of kind of parenting skills just loved working with kids and being with kids, to the point where, again, eventually ended up with my own. So it was...
One of my questions is about Boys Town, because you always talk about it, but I don't know if a lot of people know what it is. Can you explain what Boys Town is? Is it? I'm assuming it's still a thing, I think. Yeah, just explain like what it is and what you did when you worked there.
Boys Town, at least at the time when I was there, and it was, you know, almost 40 years ago, but it's the largest youth care facility in the program. It takes kids that need behavioral help, and helps work with them and educate them, and the kids actually live there. Boys Town has a lot of money, so it's a unique facility that is full functioning. It has its own elementary school, middle school, high school, hospital, fire department, police department, grocery store, you name it has it, and it's a neat facility. So I was 3 years an assistant family teacher in one of the homes. The homes typically had a couple that lived there. Whether it was just them or their family, and typically a small family, 1 or 2 kids maybe, mm-hmm. lived in the homes, and then they'd had an assistant, and that's what I was. And each assistant just helped, take the boys through daily life. You know, if it was a grocery store, it was school, homework, dating, driving. It was just like bringing up your own kids. Boys Town had amazing sports facilities, so eventually I became a PE aide for 2 years and coached both track and wrestling. And it was a fun experience.
How old were you when you worked there?
21 through 23. So it was a great learning experience to later on be able to pull some of those experiences when you have your own kids.
I was going to say, that feels like a crash course in parenting before it's all your responsibility.
And I said 21, 23, and that's not 5 years. So 21 to 26, roughly.
That's okay. No one's fact-checking you?
Nope, we're not going to.
Do you have any, like, a funny story that comes to mind, I'm sure, of something wild that happened?
One of the great stories is I'd only worked there about 2 weeks, and each home had about 9 to 10 boys in each home. And so we had our 10 10 boys there. And so one of them wanted to go out and swing on the swing that's in the backyard. So he's out there swinging, and one of the other boys said, well, I want to have a turn. I want to swing. And the kid, no, I was here first, and he kept swinging. Well, finally, a young man named Mickey. Mickey was about a fifth grader back then, but he was a big kid. Mickey just jumped in front of the kid, punched him in the face, knocked him out cold, drug him off to the side, and jumped up on the swing and started swinging.
Mickey!
And then as Mickey got older, we had to work on, obviously, anger management problems, but he was in ninth grade, and there, that's when you began high school. There was ninth grade to 12th grade. Well, there was this big 12th grade kid that kept picking on Mickey. So one day Mickey told him, he said, you shoved me again, you're going to regret it. Well, sure enough, the kid shoved him. Well, Mickey jumped up on him, wrapped his legs around his waist, wrapped his arms around his neck, and just bit him right in the forehead. Just bit him until it was blood. It was all
what
it was
an
bad.
Approach.
So again, Mickey was one of those kids that, you know, you don't push Mickey around.
How do you respond to that? Like, that happens to Mickey Mickey does that to the kid on the swing, and you're like in your mid 20s. Like, what are you trained to respond a certain way? Like, what do you do in that scenario?
Sure. I mean, so first of all, you make sure the other kid's okay. I mean, that's obvious. But once then, you deal with the behavior.
Right.
So you bring in Mickey. We had what they call a token economy. So kids could earn points or have points taken away, and throughout the day, that would earn them. I mean, they got their basic meals and sleep and homework. There were things that they had to do every day. But above and beyond that, you earned points, which you were able to cash in for privileges. So if they wanted to play Xbox, or if they wanted to go outside and play, or if they wanted to meet one of the other kids in the neighborhood or whatever, they had to be good at school. They had to be good throughout the day. They had to, you know, clean their room. So almost every life skill that we would do normal that we would think of, they earned points for. And then if they did something like that, they would lose points, and if they got negative points, then they couldn't do their privilege. They couldn't have those privileges.
Mm-hmm.
And equally as much, if a kid truly melted down, then all kids were told to go to their rooms. They instantly went to their rooms, and you dealt with the one kid one-on-one or with the other family teachers until you could get that kid under control and get the situation stable.
No Xbox for you. That's happening.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
It was 1980. Did they? They didn't have Xbox. What was their version? The Nintendo, maybe?
Whatever they played. Or play music or watch TV.
Anything fun.
Okay, cool. Yeah, you always tell, like, great stories about Boys Town, and I know that was a special time in your life. You also brought up Grandma and Grandpa. I knew Grandma a little bit, but not very well, and I never met Grandpa. Tell us a little bit about them. What were they like?
My mom was a cook. Seemed to always own for as many years I remember, her own kind of either restaurant or bar or something, and that's where I kind of got the itch to own my own business at some point in time. And
what did she cook best? Like, what did she love to make?
I personally, her fried chicken was unbelievable. She could make fried chicken that just crispy and melt in your mouth. But she was kind of that bar cook. I mean, she didn't make fancy meals, but she made, you know, the mac and cheeses or the, always seemed to be really, and she was a whiz with breakfasts. I mean, she crack four eggs in one hand and not even leave a shell. I mean, just, and it was great. So she was really good with sweet rolls and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But mom wasn't, she wasn't your, you know, typical Hazel mom. I mean, she was rough. She was tough, you know, so you had to, you learned to survive on your own thanks to them.
Mm-hmm.
Equally as much my dad was a truck driver, and dad was a big man. Dad was only, he was about 6'1", but he was handicapped in his left hand. His left hand was kind of almost pig shaped.
Mm-hmm.
But his upper body was amazing. And to give you an example, he was never beaten arm wrestling. It just did not happen with his right side, his right arm. There was legends of him going into, they kind of hung out at a certain saloon, and he'd go in and just no one would mess with him.
No one could beat him.
No.
Wow.
So then there's the story of they walked in one day, and we walked in, and he's got about 10 guys are lifting a refrigerator up, balancing it on his one arm. He puts it on a table, and he's holding this refrigerator with one hand. I remember as a kid, very young, I was young, he had a race car that he used to drive, and one uncle was a repairman, one uncle was the body guy, and then my dad was the driver because he was a truck driver, so he could drive the race car. And they had this little tripod out there many years ago, kind of trying to hoist this engine out of there, and my dad got mad, and he just let out a swear word, wrapped those chains around that forearm, and then just pulled the engine out of there. Well, you're only a couple thousand pounds. And it was just amazing to watch one man just drop it on the ground. So he was pretty legendary with his hand was, he wore like a 13 and a half ring. You know, most people wear about a 10.
I've never heard of a 13 and a half.
Yeah. So he was pretty special guy, and he was always really good with kids. I think because of the handicap, he always protect those that couldn't protect themselves. And he right. was, I think I got a little bit of that in me, that he's always believed in that. So anybody that was maybe autistic or just young or just scrawny or whatever the case may be, he was always there to make sure they were well taken care of.
Mm, that's lovely.
And he's not your biological dad, but he's your dad who raised you and who you call dad.
Yeah, that's a story in itself. I was about 14 years old when I found out that my dad by birth was not my dad. I did not know that, but you would never know that. He treated me, I was his son. I mean, even to this day, if you ask my sisters, they're like, who's dad's favorite? It's like, Jimmy, all the time. And we'd be at different, oh, you look just like your dad. And it was, you know, and again, at the time, I didn't know any difference, but I don't really know all the good reasons behind it, but I did meet my birth father once, but just to see who he was, you know, but he wasn't my dad. My dad was, you know, was Bill Gerken, and I still proudly keep that name and always will. So,
okay, we're going to transition a little bit to talking about mom. So tell us, how old were you when you met mom, and what was the story when you met her?
Had to be around 25-ish or so. Mm-hmm. Because we were, I think, 28 when we came back here and got married. So I'm going to say around 25. And very vividly, I can tell you, in meeting Chris, I had been at Boys Town working and got invited to a party, a weekend party that was being held. And I was on a softball team with the son of the mother that owned the property. And she also taught at Boys Town. She was a teacher. But the son and I played together, and he was engaged to be married to Val. So I showed up at the party and was upstairs. They had a balcony that overlooked the backyard, and I was standing up there with Val. And right, I looked over to my left, and Chris was wearing this red and white striped top, and she came walking in with two other gals. And I looked over at Val. I said, who's that right there? And she said, well, that's Chris Walczak. And I looked at her and said, Val, she doesn't know yet, but I will marry her. And that night, at first, she didn't want to have anything to do with me. I thought, okay, this plan's not going well. But through the night, as more drinking took place, we started playing.
Not flip cup, not beer pong.
Not Pictionary, with the pies, and you'd answer questions. I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank here. Trivial Pursuit, that's exactly
okay,
it.
Okay.
And when the person started mouthing me the answers, all of a sudden I was brilliant. You know, I was reading, you know, Paul the 13th, you know, and they're all looking at me like, where did you get that answer from, you know? So, yeah, basically, yes, I cheated. And so all of a sudden,
sure.
Mom was starting to show a little interest, you know? Mm-hmm. So we started dating. We only dated for, at first, about 3 weeks, because she was actually going to move to D.C. area. Well, she ended up staying. She had quit her job, but she 3 weeks became 3 months, still in Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay.
And so after 3 months of, back then, cell phones, you didn't have them, so we had several $100 phone bills.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, we thought, well, we better make sure this is meant to be. So she had moved to D.C., and after those few months of the phone bills and trying to missing each other, boy from Nebraska left and went to a D.C. area. We got together, got married, and then shortly thereafter, an opening came for us to move to Richmond, and we did.
You went to D.C. for love.
Absolutely did.
Yay. I love that story.
What brought you to the Richmond area?
So I was working retail at a store called Bradley's Department Store. It's kind of like a Target,
mm-hmm.
in the area. And they eventually went out of business, but they were up and down the East Coast. They were very large. I was working for them, and Chris had got on the wait list to go to law school at UVA. Mm-hmm. So we got out a map one day, and we looked at it, and we said, oh, there was an opening here in Short Pump area. And so we got out a map, and we saw that Gum Springs, that there was a little town that was close to, you know, kind of partially towards Charlottesville. We said, oh, we could live there. I could commute to Short Pump. She could commute to school, you know, go to school at UVA. Well, they gave us a weekend. I went to my bosses. They said, well, you can have the job if you want it, but we need to know. It was like a Thursday. Take the weekend. Let us know Monday morning. So we drove out to Gum Springs, and oh my gosh, there was a stop sign and like one building. It was not where you were going to live. As we decided to do this, we lived in the far west end, and that was where we have always been.
Mm-hmm.
But Chris never did get on the wait list. She was on the wait list, but never got past that. And Bradley's eventually was getting ready to close shops here in the area. So, and that's when we decided to go ahead and start our own business instead.
Mm-hmm.
Chris was really good friends with the founder's son and daughter-in-law of Merrymaids, which was, again, out of Omaha, Nebraska. So we went back and went through training and opened our business in 1988 and ran it for 32 years until shortly after COVID and sold it. And
yeah,
that's kind of where we are now.
I didn't realize that Chris was approaching law school or like thinking about law school at all.
She had her degree in psychology out of Creighton University. But yeah, Chris was a brilliant mind. She was the business world. She was great to have as a partner. I was the kind of more of a doer. You know, not that I didn't think about those things, but just not to the level she did. She was just always thinking ahead of time, always planning. And I would deal with more the kind of the outside sales and deal with the people, where she was always in the office rethinking, you know, the next thing to make us that much better and all mm-hmm. that. So yeah, when Chris finally did pass away, the business just was never quite the same. I just wasn't as good without her as I was, as we were together. So, you know, and after 32 years, it was time, but yeah. You know, it's eventually you move on.
So when you all were deciding to start Merry Maids, like, was it a mutual decision, or did like one person have to like convince the other, or like, do you remember how that went down?
Your mom just really was not interested at first. I mean, just she was conservative. No, we both have jobs. We're both making fairly decent money. Just looking at potentially buying a house. She was like, no, I don't want to do that. Well, again, through Kim and Brian, our friends that father owned the Merry Maids. And I did a ton of research. Every magazine, every book, everything I could get my hands on, Inc. 500, Fortune 500. I mean, you name it. I was trying to research it, and it just kept coming up. Top business, top business, top business. Mm-hmm. So finally, I think between myself and then Kim, her friend, convinced her that we should do this. The other part is again, the financial piece of it, and that's a whole nother deal. But so we were fortunate enough that Chris's dad, Doc loaned us $25,000, which back then was a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And he was smart enough to say, nope, you take $10,000 of it, put it down on a down payment of a house, and then the other part you start your business with. And the smart part of that was when you first start you both leave your careers, you really don't have income coming in. So if they look at that and you know, even though you say, well, we're growing and we're getting better. I mean, if you don't have income, they're not going to let you buy a house. Right. So he had the foresight to give us enough money to do that. But as being your mom and I, here we owe Doc money. Here we're not having income. Here we're, you know, starting a business. I mean, there was a lot of pressures.
Yeah.
And if you want to really feel pressure, think about going to your father-in-law and saying, well, we appreciate you loaning us the money, but we didn't make it. Right. That's not an option. So we were working morning, noon, and night. But eventually, it obviously turned in the right direction. We started doing really well, and then we started having the kids. So
it's such a risk. Like, you never think about how much, or I'm thinking about it more now as you're talking, like, such a risk to do it. And no wonder you work so hard and try to pull it off, because you're risking so much.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just to think that I'd go to Doc and say, we didn't make it, thanks so. That was not an option. No. But the other thing that really helped that is, again, I was doing all the reading you could do. And back then, they used to claim that, you know, like 80% of all businesses fail within the first
right.
3 years.
Right.
On the flip side of that, 85% of all franchises made it past 5 years. So I felt like it turned the numbers in our favor. And that's why I looked at some other things. I looked at frozen yogurt. That was big back then. I looked mm-hmm. at a little sporting goods store because I had that background. I looked at probably four or five other things. But this Merry Maids thing just kept coming up. And it really wasn't a lot of money to get started. It wasn't like I had to buy an existing business.
Exactly.
So right. it really worked out timing-wise. And we were really one of the first in Richmond as far as a true franchise in the cleaning industry. Mm-hmm. So it was, we did well, and it was good to us, and really helped provide for us and the family.
What advice would you give someone that's like around my age if they were like thinking about taking the leap and like wanting to start a business, but were afraid of all those things that you kind of talked about?
I think two things come to mind. One, it's kind of funny. I never thought I'd own a cleaning. I always someday thought I'd own a business, but I never thought it'd be a cleaning business. So I guess what I would say is, don't close your mind to something just because you're not comfortable with it. You just never know. On the flip side, that goes opposite of that, though, I would always say do something that you enjoy. Now, for me, it was just owning a business. I didn't care if it was ice cream, you know, a gym, you name it. I would have ran it, and I feel like we would have done pretty well. I just was driven to want to own a business. I know a lot of Merry Maids people that have gotten in. They worked for IBM, sold their stock, bought a franchise, and were miserable. So I guess after experiencing that, what I would say is, if you really want one, have something that you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. Whenever you do something that you love, you're not working, so you never really go to work. That's why I think pro athletes do so well, because it's something they've done since they were kids and they love it. I'd say the same thing in this case. Do something that, if you can, it, again, doesn't have to be, but if you can, do something that you got a passion for, because it just drives you differently than if you're, you know, and no differently than if you work somewhere that you don't like.
Right.
Oh, I got to go into work today. Well, it's the same thing if you own a business, and it's even tenfold. Mm-hmm. So that would be my recommendation, is just do something you're really passionate about. But equally as much, something comes knocking, don't necessarily turn your eyes away from it just because you just didn't see it coming.
Right. So true.
So you and mom had kids a little bit later in life. Some of that was not by choice. Some of that was the business, and you guys were very busy. But I don't know, like, now looking back at your life as you've experienced it, like, What are your thoughts on that? Do you see the pros in waiting to have kids? How do you look at it now?
Well, let me start with a little story about why, for us anyway. At one point, we had 45 employees, so we had 45 kids, we felt like. We had that filled a lot. On the flip side of that, we had been trying a while. I mean, it was just, you know, God sometimes reaches out at different times, and we had been trying for actually a few years, and it got to the point where I'd actually gone in and got tested, and then we went to Hawaii for a 3-week trip, and then when we were coming back, Chris was going to get tested. Well, we were fortunate enough that while we were there, Alex was conceived at that place.
Malia,
and that's Alex Malia Gherkin, and Malia stands for Mary, which is Chris's mom's name, so my mother-in-law. Again, was it just because it was a beautiful setting, a great place? Was it because now the pressures of being at work were off?
Right.
Was it just God's time to say it was? I mean, I don't know the answer to that, but all I can say is once that happened, then all of a sudden we were having kids all over the place. It was a beautiful thing, but I think there's a pro and a con to both. I think for some, you know, now that I'm older, yeah, do I wish I would have been young when I had the kids so that I'd be more energetic and all those things that go with being closer of age to your kids than what I am? Sure. On the flip side, we were a lot more financially stable. We had a lot of, you know, when the kids wanted to go do sports or needed something, we had the means to do that. So, mm-hmm. You know, and I know a lot of young couples struggle and they're barely getting by. So it's again, there, you know, there's never that perfect. I don't know which one's better. I just know that's probably one or the other for most people.
Right.
But for us, it was what it was, but it worked out great. Certainly proud of the kids and certainly grateful that we have them. And you know, the other thing that the business gives you in the beginning, you work so hard and you put in so many hours, but eventually that turns and eventually you have a lot more freedom.
Right.
So I had that freedom to be able to, other parents used to always say, Jim's at everything, you know, that, because
yeah.
I could, I was at all the concerts that you guys would do or the meets or the sporting events or driving you somewhere or, so there, for us, it worked well for us. I'm not sure it's for everybody. It worked well for us, though.
Can I ask how old you and Chris were when you had Alex?
35, and I'm 4 years older, so I was 39. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, love that.
There you go. You're right. 2 years older, Mom. 4 years older, Jennifer. My
there
fault.
You
so
go.
2 years older, yes. Curious. Thanks for the assist.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit about, like, the time of when Mom got sick. I was really young. I was in eighth grade, and so obviously I'm sure there were things, like, I was kept in the dark about. I didn't know decisions you guys had to make about her health and things like that. So I don't know if you feel comfortable talking about just like those 3 years Mom was sick, like what was maybe the most challenging, or like when you look back on that time as having three young kids, like what was that like from your perspective?
I mean, it was hard, obviously. You look at it not only emotionally, but certainly just you felt bad for Chris. I mean, she truly suffered and struggled health-wise. We were fortunate that on one hand, that we financially, you guys always had a nanny there, so that allowed us to be able to go to New York City. We were in Baltimore. We were in Raleigh-Durham. So we went to different places to try to. Chris had some really massive surgeries. Twice she was basically sliced completely open. They would mm-hmm. scrape out they called it mucin. It was it's almost like a gel, but that's where the cancer was. And then they would put tubes on the sides and agitate chemo through her body just mm-hmm. to try to kill any cancer that might be in there. And it was a massive surgery. And yet every time she came through if I could ever tell you kids anything, it was tell you how strong your mom was. She never complained. She fought just because she wanted to be around for you guys. She was so strong. I mean, she gave natural birth to all three of you.
Oh,
so
God.
For her, I almost have to yell at her to say, honey, you can't tell the doctors that you're a 5 in pain, because that's like a 10 to most people. You got to tell them the truth, because she had the ability to compartmentalize her brain and say, okay, I'm going to put the little pain back here, but I'm going to deal with life. And she could do it better than anybody I've ever met.
Mm.
And so she was tough. You know, it was hard too. We certainly didn't want to keep anything from you kids, but we also didn't want to scare you guys. Didn't want you to, you know, we wanted you to have as normal life as you could. So it's a balancing match. It's never easy. We were fortunate that we lived in Windham, because we were always so many people there to volunteer to help. And quite honestly, we were naive. I mean, we always thought she'd make it through. We never once gave up. So when Chris, we were both like, it just wasn't an option. We didn't think.
Mm-hmm.
So, but so many people, even after she passed away at Windham, was, you know, we always had fruits and vegetables and gosh, everybody's bringing stuff and meals, and we almost had to stop it sometimes because we'd have so much food we were throwing it away, and we felt bad. So just it was a great place to be. We were glad the kids grew up there. I'd be remiss if I just didn't say that I got to tell you that Alex was amazing through that whole time. 16 years old, she should be out doing whatever 16-year-old kids do. Instead, she'd come home and ask, what's for dinner? If I didn't have something, she'd start making something, or she'd start doing laundry. Or the boys were great, but they weren't like her. She truly became a mom to three of us, including me. It was a learning experience for me, and that's probably the last thing I want to say about Chris. I'm sorry that she suffered for 3 years, but on the flip side, she truly made me a better man. She made me a better husband. She made me a better father. I mean, I didn't know things like she always paid the bills, or she always did the cooking, or she always did the grocery shopping. Mm-hmm. So I had to start doing those things, and even though Chris suffered for 3 years, she helped me for 3 years. Mm. And so that experience of being with her and experiencing her, that's hard. But on the flip side, she held my hand all the way through the end. And, again, we'll always love and miss her because of that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Sounds like another tough girl, I know.
Kate and I talk a lot about, like, the grieving process and how you can, like, be there for someone when they're grieving. I know it's been now 11 years since Mom has passed, but even today, you have really amazing friends, like you talked about. We had an amazing community at the time. But I don't know if, like, now, even today, 11 years later, is there anything that you really appreciate that people do for you in supporting you and honoring Mom, like, however that looks to you?
Well, I think family and friends, no one ever forgets Chris. I mean, there's just, she was that one of those kind of people. She was outgoing. She was always first in front to volunteer or to support or to do whatever. So in with that, everything gets paid back. So mm-hmm. People are always there, you know, and again, whether it's the old neighbors, the Hersheys and the Mayors, I mean, we can go back years to I can go back to neighborhoods that I hadn't seen people in years, and they're still remember, you know, that Chris died the day after Christmas. And mm-hmm. And again, I say that because she was too darn stubborn to mm-hmm. not let the kids have to have Christmas be that for them. Mm-hmm. So, and she was that tough. That's just who she was. You know, grieving is, in my mind, I think it's an individual thing. Some people can kind of hide it and put up a front. Some people can't. You know, what I think about grieving is the best thing is to have that support. You know, most of my friends, we didn't sit around and talk about it. They just, let's go golfing. Let's go out and get a bite to eat somewhere. Let's just go, you know, let's get together with some other friends. And again, they would include me even once Chris passed. I would have, you know, I was the fifth wheel, but, you know, they didn't care and I didn't care. I mean, mm-hmm. that's what good friends do. So I think if I could say anything to anybody, that just be your friend, be there for them. You know, you'll know when you should back away, and you'll know when you should support and be there. And so just don't hide. That'd be the thing. You know, be there as much as you can. And I know your mom probably says that too. It's hard, it really is, but it's time helps, it really does. But on the flip side, it's just having those friends that you trust, and that's a huge piece of it.
Totally. Yeah, showing up is everything.
I would say first, you're a wonderful father, I hope you know that, but you're extremely close to each of your kids. Like, I feel like probably, I don't know, I would assume closer than a lot of fathers to their children. You like have a special, unique relationship with each of us. Why do you think that is? Where does that come from? What do you attribute that to?
One, I hope you're right. I hope I feel that way. I hope you're right that I have that relationship with each kid, and they are different. You guys, it's funny to have three kids all grow up in the same house and yet be so different. I'm like, oh, where'd you come from? So that's a kind of a fun piece of it. But I guess to answer the question, what I think really makes a difference is my dad. Mm. I mean, he took a kid that he didn't have to be that for me. He didn't have to be my father. He didn't have to be my best friend. He didn't have to be the guy that helped grow, teach me and feed me and help me grow to an adult. So how do I not do that for all my kids? And so it was always special to me to be family, you know, to have us all together, to have us all be part of that. So I didn't want to miss a sporting event. I didn't want to miss a school activity. I didn't want to miss a homecoming queen. I didn't want to miss any of that stuff. So I think that's a big piece of it. I think we were close because I was around. I think that's, you know, fathers, and sometimes it's not their fault. I mean, some have to travel because of work, and that's how they pay the bills. But I was fortunate enough, again, that we did things early on so that later in life, Chris mm-hmm. and I could be there for you guys. And that was an important part of what we wanted. Other than that, I think the only other thing is, quite frankly, Mom passing. You three were great together. And Alex, you've always been kind of that special heart to them too. And so I think that's a big piece of it too. We rallied too as a family, and I know that, and I appreciate that, and it's a blessed thing.
Hmm. What's a funny story that comes to mind from my childhood?
I think you were about ninth grade, because you weren't old enough to drive yet, but you were with kids that did drive. And I remember getting a phone call one evening, and it's like, "Daddy." And whenever Alex uses "daddy," that was always a cue. But "daddy," and I, yeah, and he said, "Officer Johnson wants to talk to you." Okay, Mr. Gherkin, yes, sir. Alex is in a car with five other people, and there are too many in the car, and they've wrecked and hit the curb, and we need someone to come down here and get her. So thankfully, the officers were wonderful enough not to haul them off, because they could have, and showed up, and sure enough, they'd hit a curb, and tire was all out of whack and everything. Now, Alex was fine, and she was just in the back seat, but still, lesson learned.
Yes, I remember it was not good. You were right. I won't name any names, but the driver had too many people in the car.
Always.
We were coming home from Young Life Club. Mm-hmm. So we were good little kids. I was still a good little girl.
You had like just prayed.
Yes. But we got, they did like, I think her in the car next to, like it was like a friend in the car next to us, like raced after a red light, or, you know, like when a green light and you race, and then she hit a curve, and yeah, that was a bad.
I'll go a little earlier too, as I sit here and reflect back. I'll go back when the day I owned a red Toyota pickup truck. I've owned three of them and my white truck now, so I'm a truck guy.
Mm-hmm.
But we were driving past Shady Grove Elementary, and I'm just cruising all of a sudden in this neighborhood we lived in, and all of a sudden Alex says, "Daddy, what does," and she used the F word, "mean?" And I'm like, "Wait, that can't be right." I said, "Honey, what'd you say?" "The F word." And I'm like, "That can't be, no, spell it." I'm still convinced that this isn't.
Yeah, she goes, can't be right.
She goes, "F-U-X-X." Oh my God. I said, "Honey, where did you learn this word?" She goes, "Someone used a magic marker on their slide at school and spelled it, and I don't know what that is." So I said, "Well, honey, that's a mommy question, not a daddy question."
Of course.
Oh, did I get in trouble? Oh, that was not good. It came back to haunt me big time, but that one was a good one.
Who wrote that on the slide? That's for kids.
So, yeah, I was convinced my daughter could not be using that word. There was no way.
Nope.
And now a little bit older, I'll tell one more. So Alex was 16 years old, and she was dating someone,
mm-hmm.
and was invited over, I don't remember if it was homecoming or prom, was invited to go and spend the night with other kids at a facility, not at their home, but at a facility. Well, this particular young man, his father was high enough up, he had agents that stayed with him at all times.
Mm-hmm.
So they had come previously to our house to check out the house to make sure that there wasn't any problems, or that they could safely come and visit, and da-da-da-da. So that day they showed up, and they came, and we had a great time, but introduced ourselves and talked to them, and they brought their grandmother and brought their assistant. And so we chatted for a while. Well, then everybody starts to get ready to leave, and I start walking with this young man and take him the other way around the side of the house. And I just have a little chat with him and say, "You know, young man," I won't use his name, but I'll say that what I said was that, "You know, you don't have enough Secret Service here to protect you if something happens to my daughter. You do know that, don't you?" "Yes, sir. Yes, sir." I said, "Well, just make sure she comes home safely." "Yes, sir. Yes, sir." So that was right. Yeah, that was.
You tell him.
Classic dad.
Classic dad speech.
I didn't clean the gun while I was doing it.
Thank God.
You could have. That would have been a nice touch.
First on the most wanted list, my goodness.
Yeah, not with the security around. I guess that would have gone down.
You have been fortunate enough to get remarried since we've lost Mom. And so I didn't know if, at what point did you know that you were going to get remarried? What was that journey like for you?
Well, let me start off with, I just didn't even think I'd be dating, quite frankly. I mean, you're in the midst of, all of a sudden, you go from two of you to one of you, and the grieving period, and then you're just trying to get kids to school and graduate and feed them. And I mean, life goes on. You can't just sit and take a pause button. So I was not in any way ready to kind of do anything, quite frankly. It's a cute story, though, that Jennifer, who's my current wife, was also Will's fourth grade teacher. And that was her last year, so that she actually physically taught. After that, she's an administrator and eventually was an associate principal for, I think, 8 years, and has recently retired. But back to after Chris had passed away, every teacher that all the kids had ever had came to the funeral, every one of them.
Oh, my God.
So, and that's for all three kids. And so I had made a point to go to each school at some point in time and thank them for coming personally, not just send a card, but personally thank them, because I thought that was pretty impressive, and it said amazing things about at the kids, but be Chris.
Incredible.
And how the effort that she put through with them. But the bottom line is, at Shady Grove, their elementary school that all three kids went to, there was a PE teacher there that her husband was diagnosed with leukemia about the same time Chris was diagnosed with cancer. And so we had spent a lot of time. I was kind of her go-to dad for after-school things or for field day and things like that. But I'd gone several times through months of showing up, and each time she was either at an appointment or because of her husband, she was with him. Mm-hmm. The good news is he went in full remission, and they are living happily, and she's retired, and they're doing great. But somehow I just kept missing her. But each time I'd go by Jennifer's office, was right by the front door, and she'd always was so kind to me, and she'd always, "You holding up okay? You doing all right? You know, the kids, anything I can do?" So Jennifer was just amazing then. So finally, and I can't even give you a good rationale why, but finally just one day, and please realize it's been 30 some years, because I was married 32 years, so or 28 years at that point, I think, and I hadn't asked someone out, and you know, long prior time. To that, so probably 30 plus years,
right?
So I'm sitting there, you know, if you're not, you know, if you'd like to, you know, maybe go have a drink or something. So I stuttered through it, and she said yes. And the cute story was she wrote her name and number on a little sticky and gave it to me, and I still have it, by the way. But then I had a Subaru, and I went out to the Subaru, and I sat down in the Subaru. And as I'm walking to the Subaru, I'm kind of clicking my heels a little bit, thinking, oh, you still got it.
Got it.
Then I got in the Subaru, and I looked and kind of saw myself in the image of the mirror, and I'm like, you big dummy. If she'd said no, you'd never go in that school again. What were you thinking? So I'm fortunate that I didn't have the guts. I didn't think it through, and it just happened, because if I thought it through, I probably would have never had the guts to do it.
Yes.
So
tell the story then about your friend, because you then, tell that part.
So part two, so that was just to get the date. Mm-hmm. So right after that, I had all my friends are still married, which is a beautiful thing, but mm-hmm. I had one friend that was divorced. And so I had talked to him a couple times about just saying, God, you know, what's this dating thing like? And I'm just not a, you know, get on a app or get on a, you know, a web page, and that would not be me. Now, I was fortunate enough that I knew enough Wyndham moms that I really felt like, you know, somewhere I would be able to get a date if I ever needed to at some point in time. But I had called Lance, and I was just talking to my friend, and just said, I said, Lance, I got a date. He said, that's great. But let me just tell you, Jim, a lot of times they say yes and to your face, but they then bail. If you call her up and talk to her and she bails, just cut your losses and move on. I'm like, all right. Sure enough, that night, called her. I forgot. I have a party to go to on Friday. This was like a Tuesday. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so I'm like, oh, there goes that one, right? So I'm thinking that's probably not going to work out. We talked a couple more times on the phone, and she kept assuring me, no, I really do. Well, the party happened to be in our neighborhood. It happened to be some people that I wasn't as close with, but we certainly knew. Mm-hmm. And so Friday was coming. That was when the party was. Friday. It was actually St. Patrick's Day. My oldest son, Jake, went to the leadership program at a school different than the high school the other kids went to. And it just so happened they were playing Deep Run, which is where Alex and Will went to school. They were playing them in baseball. And I was out front flipping hamburgers for the grill. Mm-hmm. And here comes the Houlihans, the mom and the dad. Jim, they come, we're having a party tonight. We want you to come. Come to our party. And I'm sitting there going, okay, would I dare go to a party that I know Jennifer's at and yet won't expect me, and then I would show up? I'm like, that's it. So now I'm battling that thought.
Right.
Well, the cute story was real quick, just their son was the pitcher that night. Jake was leadoff batter. And I knew a lot more of the Deep Run parents than I did the right. Freeman kids, even though Jake had been going to school there, because all these people lived in the same neighborhood. Kid pitches a pitch. Jake cranks out a triple, and that starts the game off. So I turn to them and say, am I still invited to the party? And everybody just kind of start busting out laughing.
I
ended up convincing myself I should go. Well, she had also told them once she got there, they had said, guess who we ran into over at the ball game? We ran into Jim Kirkin, and we asked him to come tonight. So then she was like, well, guys, I should probably tell you that he's asked me out. And both women start just crying instantly, saying, it's a perfect match. You absolutely should be going out with him. So, and the rest is kind of history.
You got a good endorsement from two of our friends. That never hurts.
Well, cute. I love that story. Those are kind of all of the overview questions I had. I don't know if there's any topics we didn't talk about, Dad, that you wanted to get to. The last thing I thought that I did want to ask you was just general life advice for someone that's in their 20s, early 30s. What's something that you wish you had known when you were my age that you would want somebody to know?
That one's actually pretty easy. One, it quite frankly is save now. Save when you're young. Mm. It doesn't take a fortune. Compounding interest through years, you know, you don't think, believe me, I certainly did when I was in my 20s and 30s. I didn't think that I'll live forever. And I thought, money will be there and I'll keep making more. And if and when you have a child, put away that little bit for their college. Mm-hmm. It makes a huge difference. Get the 501 plan or whatever you got to do. But again, above me on that, save for your retirement. And again, you think, well, I'll have a house and there's going to be equity there. All those things are true, but it'll amaze you how much money you need. So start early, put away a little bit becomes a lot of it if you just leave it there.
And
that truly would be my advice. The other thing is getting married. You married your best friend for a reason. Mm-hmm. Keep it that way. So many people lose sight of whatever that is. I don't know that answer. I don't know why. I've been fortunate enough. I mean, I've used this line before, but I've been fortunate enough that most men don't find one amazing woman. I found two. If you truly believe in the person that you're marrying, then believe in them for life. And just both of you love each other, love on each other, make it work. You know, and eventually, again, all those things, school, education, kids, work, a lot of things get in the way of that, but never forget what's most important.
Mm, that's great advice.
I love it.
I love it too. I have a question because Alex, I'm stealing it from Alex because she asked my mom this question last night and I was like, that's a great question. She asked her, so I'll ask you, is there any stories or anything that comes to mind about your life that Alex has never heard before that you would share? For example, like my mom last night told me that she spent the night on an aircraft carrier and I was like, "What? Since when? I never knew this story ever." So I didn't know if there's anything, any memory or fun story that comes to mind that you're like, I don't know if my kids know that about me.
I will tell the quick story that Alex knows that most people would never know, but we had friends of ours that owned the Merry Maids in Newport News area and mm-hmm. we got invited down for a wedding. And in that wedding, I had told their dad, who's my friend, I had told him, told me that he'd bought a case of Bud Light bottles for me, that was going to be there just for me. And I told him, you didn't buy enough. So he went out and bought a second case, but uh-huh. he said, there's no way you're going to drink that. I said, all right. So we went to the wedding, and Alex was young, but we went to the wedding, and Chris and I and Alex went. That night, I drank 28 beers that night.
Whoa.
And I was, and Alex has only twice probably in her whole life seen me. I don't drink that often. So it was a big deal. That night I was pretty trashed, obviously. Uh-huh. Well, the next morning we got up and left. We had to leave the hotel. And I probably was still legally drunk by the time driving us home.
Definitely.
But at least I never got sick. Mm-hmm. But it was bad. It was really bad. So
oh, my gosh.
That's why I don't do that stuff very often. And I guess that's my lesson to you guys. Yeah. It's not worth it.
I also heard that Chris was a bit of a tank and she could hold her alcohol really well. And Alex does this really well. And she's half my size and she can hold 2 to 3 times the amount of alcohol that I can. Is this true?
That's probably the story. That's probably one of the stories I showed before we were married. When we first started dating, we almost broke up because of we would go out on a date and we'd end up at a party or something or friends and we'd start drinking. And I'd be wasted, and she'd just be like, what's wrong with you? I mean, she's ready. I mean, I'm not even. And so I started talking to Jim Comstock, who's her brother-in-law. She was legendary at Creighton University that the guy after guy couldn't out-drink her. And again, mom weighed, what, 125 pounds maybe? I mean,
tiny
she was
thing.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't figure it out. So it got to the point where I would pasta build. I would eat pizza and pasta before we would go out on a date just so I could. And sure enough, the quick story there was one time when I lived in D.C., mm-hmm. we lived with another gal. Chris had a roommate. So when I first moved there, the three of us lived together. We'd gone out with her boyfriend and he and I started getting kind of trash. And we were just going to drive up to Atlantic City and gamble for the night. Mm-hmm. And Chris was like, no, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. It was her car, mm-hmm. but I had the keys. I always drove. But when we got out the car, she goes, well, I'm going to drive. I said, no, I'm fine. She goes, no, it's my car. I'm driving. Well, that chapped me. That was like, fine. I gave her the key and I started walking. Now, I can remember, it was like December and all I had on was probably a dress shirt, but no jacket, no nothing. Two, I walked. It took me a while, but I finally got
you
back
committed.
To the apartment and mom was crying. You know, it was one of the few times I made her cry. I tried never to do that. So we go in, she's like, what were you thinking? I said, well, I had to figure out where I was. So we ended up that next morning driving back the way I walked. It was 17 miles I walked.
My gosh.
Yeah. Now, I was young and athletic and in pretty good shape back then. But yeah,
that took hours, right?
It took about 3 hours.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I was cold. Other than that, I felt fine.
That is crazy. That is almost a marathon.
Yeah.
That is wild.
I'm trying to think of a story that Alex doesn't know. Oh, okay. She probably doesn't know this, and I'm not even sure I should even tell this story, but I'll just do it.
We can cut it out if you'd rather.
So. I was young. I was in eighth grade because I was, again, remember, I lived a different life back then. I was really good at pool. I always had money in my pocket at a young age because, again, my mom owned bars. And I was could fight. You wouldn't know it today, but I could fight and all those things. So sure enough, at school, I was on the wrestling team. There was a guy on the basketball team that we got into it. And at this school, it was a very mixture of about a third Hispanic, a third white, and then a third black. And so it was kind of one of those series of if you fought one, you had to fight about a dozen. We were all sitting around and something. This kid just didn't like me. He and I just did not. I can say his name, Sanchez. I just know it was Sanchez. We did not like each other. And so we ended up getting in a fight, and I knocked out his whole roof of his mouth, just knocked out all the teeth. And I'd done a spinning kick and kicked it. Yeah, and kicked him. I mean, I kicked him hard. It was bad. I hadn't told mom, and the police showed up at the house with a warrant for my arrest. And mom asked me what happened. I said, "Mom, he started it. He took the first swing. I just told him I was going to finish it." And so, sure enough, I was in front of the police. I had to go to the down to the courtroom. I had to go to the school. That was like a Friday because of sports. So I had Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I went back into school. The principal calls me to the office. I'm like, "Oh, God." So I go down to the office. He literally shook my hand and said, "You've never caused me problems before. That kid's a problem maker. He causes problems all the time. I believe what you said is true. Don't worry about it. I've got your back."
What a cool administrator.
Yeah. So it was like, so that was it. But and I never got any, but I truly, when I say I probably came pretty close to killing a kid, I did. Yeah. That's when my sisters finally, Kathy, that's when I moved to Millard. She finally told mom, "I got to take him. He's running the streets too much. He's getting in too much trouble." So that's when I ended up moving to Millard and going to school with my sister and all that. So, yeah.
Oh, but, man. Gosh. There you go. Well, I just want to say that I love hearing more about your life because I already feel like I know you. And I've now known you for, 8 years, 9 years, almost a decade, which is crazy to think about. Next year's going to be 10 years. We should throw a party.
We should. Well, let me just say something about that, too. Uptown Girls, you guys were, you want to talk about a thing that made my heart just pitter-patter and love doing was every time I could come and see you guys was truly, it's an amazing story, just the 10 of you and how you've stayed together through the years. But there was no doubt in my mind when I'd come up there how close you guys were all. And that's a life lesson in itself, too.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I love you. I loved every one of you guys. And it's a beautiful thing.
It was such a special time. Yeah. And love all of them so much to this day. But I just love learning about you and also being reminded that you had three sisters and learning about your dad and how you grew up. All of it makes so much sense to me of what I've experienced with you as I know you. And you've always been so kind and welcoming and have made me feel so loved and included. And you guys were so wonderful to my family when we lost my dad because you had been there and you have like lived the story. And I just can't even express how much I love you and you mean to me. And my family just adores you and Jennifer. And I'm just so thankful to know you.
Now you're an amazing family. And again, I'm sorry for your loss, but your mom, I just know she's a rock. I know she's the strength of the world. So think your brother's cool as can be. Big baby, but other than that, don't tell him that though. He's too big for me.
Yeah, don't tell him.
Yeah, but you guys are just an amazing family. And
well, we love you.
Love you too, sweetheart.
Last question. What's your favorite thing? What's, if you had to pick a favorite thing about Alex, what would it be?
Truly, there could be a lot of things. I love bragging about how she was deep run high school athlete of the year. She was homecoming queen. There's a lot of bragging I could do about Alex, as you know, getting her first in my family down the line. To get your degree was one thing, to get a master's, she's the first by far. There's nobody else. You can go back generations, there's nobody else that's done that. So there's a lot of things I could brag about as far as Alex, but I think the one thing that always stands out to me is that the day that I called her Peanut. When she was first born, they brought her in this little yellow kind of cream waffled blanket that was wrapped. And she's just, she's literally a ball. And she just looked like a little peanut there. And I'm holding her. And so I will never forget Peanut. But then to think that little Peanut here, she's got one brother that's about 6'1". She got another one's almost 6'2". The big one weighs about 280. He's about the size of Hoss. and yet they fear her. They fear her to no end. And it just cracks me up that she can just give them that look. Now, her mom could do that for me.
Yes.
But she can give them that look, and they kind of quiver in the corner. So that's the story probably I'd like to tell, is that I just marvel at the fact that the two of them, they act all big and bad, but until little sis shows up, and then that all changes real quick.
So true. Small but mighty.
Small but mighty. Well, Dad, thank you so much for talking and sharing. You almost had me there for a moment. I got choked up, but you didn't.
Oh, I definitely.
You didn't break me. You didn't break me. So, I love you, and thank you so much.
I didn't want to break you. That was not my goal here, and I hope this works for you guys. It was a lot of fun. Love both of you. Again, maybe 10 years we'll do the 10-year reunion.
Yes,
something like that.
Let's do it.
All right.
Love it.
Love you.
Love you. Bye.